Welcome to another New Zealand Doctor podcast. This is a podcast version of the regular monthly article, The First Time, written and presented by me, Dr. Joe Scott-Jones. The First Time is a series of articles designed to help people new to general practice deal with some of the challenges and to refresh ideas in hoary old crones like myself. This time we're talking about the first time you complete a disability allowance form. In New Zealand, patients whose income is low to average and have a condition that requires medical attention that's going to continue for more than 6 months may be eligible for a disability allowance to help with the additional costs of dealing with that condition. More details are online at the workandincome.govt.nz website. Filling in these forms makes up some of the irritating bureaucracy that we deal with every day and can become a cursory tick box exercise. Doctor's fees, prescription charges, and rubber stamp. Currently, the disability allowance can recoup costs up to $60.54 per week for our patients. It's worth stopping and thinking for a while what life is like for a single person reliant on New Zealand superannuation of around $338 to $357 a week. What would it mean to have their medical costs reimbursed? It's worth considering the full range of services that people may be entitled to and try and maximise this benefit for your patients. Allowable costs are those directly related to the patient's disability. So, think about your patient and how their condition might have an impact on expenses. The allowance can cover the costs of gardening, lawns, outside window cleaning, and many elderly patients require this help due to arthritis and other effort-limiting conditions. This aspect of the allowance is the most expensive item from the taxpayers' coffers, and probably the most talk-about benefit of the disability allowance at the Bridge Club. You may also become familiar with the extra forms required to support the costs of medical alarms. These are again a major expense to the public purse, but if a medical alarm is necessary for normal daily living, and without it the person's life or health will be put at risk or their disability aggravated, the allowance can reimburse the cost of rental and monitoring. It's often easy to justify the cost of having a telephone. These are necessary for making appointments, of course, and calling for help in an emergency. But it's also important that we can help to cover the transport to and from a health professional. And remember that transport can also be supported for everyday activities like shopping or work if special transport has to be arranged. The disability allowance can also help with daycare for the elderly disabled. Usually for the over 65s, the costs of attending and travel to the centre can be covered. Ambulance fees and subscriptions. St John charges $45 a year for an individual. People can get reimbursed if they need to use the ambulance and have to pay a casual fee. Authorised consumables such as hearing aids, vets fees for guide dogs, incontinence pads if they're not provided through the system can also be covered. Think about clothing. Does your patient have the need to regularly wash clothes or bedding more often than normal? What about wear and tear resulting from use of a prosthetic aid or a wheelchair, or the need to have clothes or shoes made to measure? Counselling can be covered up to 10 sessions. With special approval, sometimes more, if the need for counselling is directly related to the person's disability. Even gym and swimming pool fees can be covered if exercise activities are directly related to a person's disability and it will have a therapeutic value. Pretty good, hey? Power, gas and heating can be covered. Costs over and above the normal power consumption of a similar sized household will be reimbursed. Rental equipment. If the service can't be provided by anybody else, and if life or health would be put at risk or disability aggravated, then the patient can hire equipment and have the costs covered by the disability allowance. Even special foods, like gluten-free bread mix, and vitamins, supplements, herbal remedies and minerals, can also be included when they're recommended as necessary for the management of the condition. This touches on one of the areas I most struggle with. The cover of alternative treatment. I don't know about you, but I try and keep an open mind about complementary and alternative medicines, but, well, frankly, if they really were effective, then they wouldn't be alternative, would they? So medications are usually only supported if they're subsidised or partially subsidised under the New Zealand Public Health and Disability Act. And in order to be reimbursed, complementary or alternative treatment must be supported by a medical practitioner as being necessary to be publicly funded. Treatment should also be provided or supervised by a health practitioner who is covered by the Health Practitioners Competency Assurance Act. Osteopaths and chiropractors are covered, for example, but not naturopaths. I suspect we need to just watch this space. For doctors, the Medical Council doesn't oppose the use of complementary and alternative medicines if they've been shown to be of minimal harm and to benefit patients who are fully informed of the whole range of services available to them, and they consent to their treatment, then doctors can provide or supervise these medications. However, we need to just think about this. These need to have been shown to be of minimal harm and to be of benefit to patients. And the patients need to be fully informed of the whole range of services available to them and consent to that treatment. That's quite a large burden of responsibility on the GP whose patients wants their nightshade leaf extract paid for by the taxpayer. Remember, first you save yourself. If you approve the application for the disability allowance to cover these therapies, you have to be satisfied that they're of benefit to the patient and necessary for the condition. A few patients with irritable bowel syndrome, multiple sclerosis and motor neuron disease spring to mind, where conventional medicine does not have a lot to offer, and they swear that the Mongolian yak bile is a cure for their symptoms. In these cases, if severely pressed, I will cite the fact that we have to be convinced that this is necessary and of benefit to them, and engage the patient in a trial of one. To run a trial of one trial with a patient, you need to establish some measurable criteria that you're seeking to change. Episodes of bloating and loose motions, for example, in IBS, but ideally something objective. And to measure a baseline rate, we'll call that A, before introducing the diluted extract of civet pancreas or whatever it is. You then measure a rate during treatment, B, and then a rate after treatment has been ceased, A. You can have quite a lot of fun with this if your patient is willing and consented. Try an A-B-A-B run or add in a placebo. With the involvement of your local pharmacist, you could even try and blind yourself and the patient to the medication. Run an A-placebo-B-A experiment. Using this method, you'll have enough evidence to satisfy yourself and John Key that this treatment was of benefit to this person. I'm not sure about the yak, though. Well, that's it for this New Zealand Doctor podcast. Look out for more on iTunes. Subscribe to the magazine at nzdoctor.co.nz. And follow me on Twitter at ApodikiGP. Remember, first you save yourself.